Zentrips. Subterranean nocturnal vibes. The best in underground electronica.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
All right, you're listening to Zen Trips, of course, independent radio with your favorite host, dude. And I have one of my favorite people in here tonight, Mr. C.
Absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you for having me in.
Is this your first time in the Bay Area?
No, I've been here many times. I DJ at Snatch for Chris Milo.
Oh, yeah, we know Chris really well.
He's a buddy. We go way back. In fact, I first met him when I was touring with The Shaman back in the day, and he actually opened up for us here in Tampa.
Excellent. Yeah. And, you know, I was going through the stuff on your bio, and we were discussing how you continually update it. And I'm looking at all these different accolades and all these people that you've worked with, and I thought to myself, how am I possibly ever going to cover all these points? So I think we're just going to go through it and let it flow.
Okay, sounds good to me.
So let's start at the beginning. Mr. E?
Yeah, well done. Basically, the first track that I ever made was it was released in August 1987, and I made the track with Evil Eddie Richards, another legend in dance music, and we decided to take the Mister from my name and the E from Evil Ed, and put it together with, like, spell the Mister like M-Y-S-T-E-R, so it's like a mystery who this person was.
Total
so there
enigma.
Was actually no pun on the E intended at that point.
Remain enigmatic.
Yes.
Now that kind of took you to somebody told me to ask you about Camden. Place?
Camden Palace.
Palace. Yeah, okay, well, I can't read my own writing.
The Camden Palace was an amazing nightclub in Camden Town in North London. And it was one of the clubs that really first started pushing house music and other sorts of electronic music. And they would play everything from like the first wave, new wave, to punk, to disco, to electro, and then house. And they would mix it all up together. You could hear just about everything in there. And Eddie Richards was actually the resident DJ, along with another guy called Colin Favor. And those two guys were my idols. It was like I was there. And like dancing and going up to the booth, meeting them, persuading them to let me get on the mic and do some rapping. And yeah, that was kind of where I sort of cut my teeth in a way as a rapper.
Well, from what I understand, that you had the wheels of rap were pretty smooth at that point, at the beginning as well.
Yeah, well, I started rapping in clubs at a very young age. I was only 16, or just about 17, when I started to rap in clubs. In the UK, you don't need ID to get into clubs. And I looked a little older, so I could get away with it. And the clubs are 18 and up. Not 21 and up, so and you're allowed to drink booze at 18 in the UK. So I started clubbing and rapping, and that was it was like 1982. It was when I became a club rapper.
So you were hooked.
Yeah, I was hooked. You know, at the age of 13, I was listening to, you know, when Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five were bringing out their early stuff, and the Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight blew me away. I learned every word, and you know, even now, you know, I can put on some of these old school late 70s, early 80s rap tracks, and I remember every word. Oh, and yeah. I'd rap along and really enjoy it. And then I thought, you know what? I want to do that. I knew I wanted to be involved in music somehow, and rap really turned me on. And I was into the whole thing, the whole dance craze. I used to do robot dancing before body popping and break dancing even came in. I was into like the robot dancing and then the body popping and locking. When the break dancing started, that was kind of when I started rapping. I was never a break dancer. My hair's kind of thin, so spinning on the head and like any loss of, anything that was loss of hair was a big no-no. So I was like, no, I'm not doing that. But and also at 16, like there was all these young kids coming in, like 10, 11, 12, doing these like amazing break dance moves, and I'm not supple. I can't even touch my toes, dude. So it was like, yeah, like, I'm not going down that road. How can I stay a step ahead of the game? So I started writing lyrics.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, the rap from that era has a whole different flavor to it.
Oh,
a whole
yeah.
different vibe. It's
oh,
so
yeah.
happy.
It was fun. Yeah. I mean, like, rap actually started with loudmouth DJs getting on the mic and saying, "Hey, how you doing, everybody? Let's have some fun."
And the MC is born.
And that's how it was born. So it was a lot of the early raps were all about that kind of thing. It was about having fun, the party shaking, the places quaking, you know, and that's how it was. And that was, you know, before the whole fat gold chain. And I think for me, it started to change when it slowed down, because originally it was like funk and disco. Yeah. Like a lot of the rap. And then it slowed down and got like more attitude. I think I'd say like Eric B and Rakim.
Oh, yes.
You know, I know you got Soul, was probably where it started to change. Yes. It was at that point. And then it started to become a bit more battle, a little bit more attitude-y, like check me with my fat gold chain. And that was never really my style. So yeah. it was at that point, I think it's 85, I started to rap about Jack. I discovered, like, well, I always liked to rap on more upbeat music. I would rap on disco more than I would the slower funk stuff. Although I did rap on slower stuff as well, and reggae. But when house come along, it was like, okay, yeah, this is it. This is what I want to rap on. This has got more energy. This has got more vibe for me. So by the time it got to like 86, all of my lyrics were about jacking your body.
Excellent. One of my inspirations from that particular era when rap and house started to come together was Twin Hype.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And yeah. I'll play that now, and people ask me, who is that? They're excited by it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and my reason for bringing that up is there was a certain energy to that, which takes me to The Shaman.
Right.
Okay. I've listened to the music forever, and I've seen the videos, and everybody's smiling,
yeah,
and having good time. It has
an
uplifting feeling to it.
Yeah. No, house for me, it was where it was at. And like, you know, I was rapping on house, and it was because of me rapping at the Camden Palace with Eddie Richards and Colin Favour that Eddie said to me, "Oh, why don't you come into the studio and we'll put this down on wax?" And I'm like, "Yeah, let's do it." And we went into the studio, and when I got into the studio, and like Eddie made this really deep house track, and it for me, it didn't really. I didn't want to just throw a load of fun rap lyrics on top of this deep house track. So instead, I decided to do a spoken word thing about meditation, the power of positive thinking, which is what that mystery track was all about. The whole vocal content was about positive thinking and meditation and what can be achieved. And if I'd have actually done a rap on that track that got released in August 1987, it would have been the first hip house record ever released.
Wow.
But I didn't. I elected to go a different route.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you've carried that sort of energy and that attitude through all of your creations, and you've maintained that.
You know what? It's about having fun. You know, like, for me, until the day I die, I'm going to have as much fun as I can possibly have.
Amen.
And that's what it's about. It's for me, the music, and like, don't get me wrong, the music that I make and the music that I do is very serious. It can get quite haunting and dark and psychedelic and trippy, but let's have some fun with it. The seriousness is in the music. You know, when I go out, I want to have a blast. And that for me is what's up.
Oh, yes. Now, what was it like for you personally to be in that, the wave of... For lack of better description, like the rave bands, because it was electronica. There were instruments. There were a lot of vocals. There were MCs. It wasn't just two DJs, you know, or a DJ and just an MC. But that wave, it hit the shores of the U.S. and it exploded.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun and a real pleasure and an honor to be right at the beginning of that first wave. It was the way to go. As a DJ, I started DJing in autumn 1987. After making that first record, I decided I don't want to be just a rapper. I want to do more. I want to produce. I want to DJ. I want to do the whole nine yards. And I started DJing. So that would be my 25th anniversary this fall as a professional. And I gave up my last real job. And I had DJed a bunch before that, but not as a professional.
Now, what was your real job?
Well, my last real job, I was a milkman. I had this like electronic milk cart, and I would drive around delivering bottles of milk on people's doorsteps. That was my last real job. But that was a fun job.
I'm sure it was.
Because like I would get into the milk yard and load up the float with milk and be out of the yard delivering by 7 in the morning or 6:30 in the morning. I'd be done by 11, sleep all day till 9 o'clock at night, get up, eat, go clubbing 7 nights a week. It's like, perfect.
Yeah, you're already pumped up and ready for work when you get there.
And the amount of lonely housewives, jeez.
That makes me think of that Monty Python sketch where the milkman goes into the bedroom and there's like 20 other milkmen in a room.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we get back to you, your DJing, when you decided to DJ. Some people credit you, and correct me if I'm wrong, or say, yes, you're right, mm-hmm. that you are the creator of True Tech House.
Well...
Because you were really into techno,
it's a strange thing. There was a handful of DJs in London, and I would suppose I would be one of those that were right at the forefront of it, that was playing house and techno. And for me, like Eddie Richards, who, like I say, is my idol, he said the first time he came across the word was in 92 or 91, and I gave him a mixtape called Tech House. And I had some problems in the early 90s where the house clubs were like, oh no, we don't really want to book Mr. C, he's a techno DJ. And the techno clubs were like, oh no, we don't really want to book Mr. C, he's a house DJ. And I was sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
A victim of your uniqueness.
And it was a bit strange. So, but it was a term that we all used in the underground scene in London for this hybrid of music. And it wasn't really a hybrid. It was like edgy psychedelic house, or it was groovy funky techno, and we just was, oh, there's this new techie housey track, and you know, it just became tech house. But I was the person that was responsible for actually calling the 6 or 7 or 8 DJ producers in London that were doing this kind of thing and saying, you know what, yeah, New York has New York garage, Chicago has house music, Detroit has techno, and it all comes from a handful of guys branding a name. Why don't we pull one over on the media and do the same thing? Right, we do this thing, we're calling it Tech House. Why don't we, for the next 6 months, every time we do a remix, call it the Tech House Mix? And that's what we did. And everybody bit. The media bit it straight away. And before you know it, there was Tech House and it was from London. And I was responsible for coming up with that in some way. But like I say, I can't take full responsibility because it was a term that we was using anyway in the clubs and on the streets. So, you know, I can't claim full responsibility.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a real quick break. You're listening to Zen Trips. This dude with my very special guest, Mr. C, the super freak himself. We'll be right back.
The richest families in the world making real money.
time to take some of the money back. It's time to occupy.
And you are listening to Zen Trips Independent Radio. This is Dude, and in the house with me, Mr. C. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
How was that for a great break?
Yeah, nice break.
Oh, you know, let's kind of diverge from the music a little bit. When you started traveling, and we talked about this earlier, that you had this positive attitude, and you were into meditation and expanding your awareness. Was there a particular point once you hit a certain level, say with the shaman, where you really started to explore that, where you were able to go off and really indulge yourself or pursue that path?
Well, I think I actually started way before.
Yeah.
I was 17 when I started to practice transcendental meditation and started to, you know, use the law of attraction by thinking positive and attracting things to myself. And that was really my first way of pushing it. And I got into it in a heavy way, meditated daily. And that's pretty much been the reason for all my success is that, you know, it's knowing that you can and then working really hard to get something. But that was always an inspiration. But I think once we started touring the world with the shaman, it gave me access to a lot of other things, meeting very special people. I was lucky enough to meet Alexander Shulgin and a few various different people. And my travels took me to some interesting places. But I think the place that I learned the most was within, not without.
Right. Yes, I've spent a lot of journeys inward myself.
Yeah.
Now, so do you feel like your music is actually maybe a form of moving meditation?
Absolutely. There's many different types of meditation. And the whole point of meditation is to clear your mind of thought, because we're thinking every waking minute of our lives, we're in thought. And then even when we go to bed, we dream, we're in thought. So the whole point of meditation is about coming to stillness, bringing your body to stillness and bringing your mind to stillness and pausing thought. Well, you can do a walking meditation, you can do a running meditation, you can do a swimming meditation. Dancing is indeed meditation, because you can be on a dance floor, dancing, eyes closed, in the moment, without thought. And it's that being in the moment, because thoughts aren't in the moment. All of our thoughts are about the problems of yesterday and the possible solutions of tomorrow. So when you're in that moment on the dance floor and you're dancing and you're just in there and enjoying the music, that's a form of meditation for sure. And that was one of the things that really attracted me to dance music and to house music. Definitely one of the reasons I wanted to become a DJ was because I knew that there was a special magic and a special power within the music and within the beats, that you could take people on a magical journey. And in that magical journey, you could make them question what's going on around them, make them go within and start to question things. It's a challenge. And that, for me, was a big part of the turn on for electronic dance music.
It's like the new version of the temple.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You're a high priest of rhythmic noise.
Well, it has been said. but yeah, I mean, in a way, DJs are modern day shamans, you know, the ones that really know what they're doing and the ones that do it for the right reasons. Because let's be honest here. Most DJs do it for money or ego, which it's not about taking people on a magical journey for many. And it's not about a celebration of life for many,
self-aggrandizing.
But those that do it for the right reasons, and they go into the world of the other via some transcendental state, be it with music, be it with drugs or whatever it is, and they can go into that domain of the ideas, maybe through meditation, and gain knowledge and information, and then bring that back in a form of art and play music which expresses that feeling that definitely influences a crowd on a dance floor. So DJs can be like modern day shamans.
Oh yes, I've been a DJ for years myself, and to see how you get that instant feedback.
Yes,
and if you don't feel that vibe and ride that wave, then you're gonna kill the room.
Well, yeah,
anyway.
And it's about, you know, like when you catch that vibe. It's a telepathic community. It's no longer like as me as a DJ. It's not me and them. It's us.
Right.
And that's how I play. And I know that if I like a record and it's like new and fresh and exciting and different, why isn't everybody else going to like that? So I'm prepared to sort of go out of my way to find new music to play to others so that they can be challenged and enjoy in the same way that I do. So when I'm playing new music, I just bought 55 slabs of vinyl last week in London. They're all in my record box tonight, and they're getting played. And I'm going to be playing blind. It's going to sound just as fresh to me as it is for the kids on the dance floor. And because of that, we're feeling the same vibe. We're feeling the same euphoric happiness from this new sound. We're feeling the same body temperatures. We're hearing the same sounds. We're seeing the same lights. that forms a telepathic community because our frequencies really start to home in and tune in. And that's when it
harmonizes.
It clicks. It's like, bam, it clicks. And that's the magic right there.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And I've seen when, you know, DJs have taken over with this crowd and they pause for that moment and drop that bass line.
Yeah.
And then you see it move like a standing wave through the crowd.
Yeah. But you have to be part of the crowd
yes.
as a DJ. And that's what's really important. It's about actually, you know, it being interacting and connecting and being it's an us thing. When I'm DJing, I'm one of the crowd. I'm one of the people in that room.
Because you're enjoying it just as much.
Just as much.
It makes a very big difference.
And in the same way.
So you keep your sets, like you just pretty much broke it down. You know, you want to drop fresh stuff. And
yeah.
You're going there. And I've seen DJs where I've gone to see them three events in a row, and it's the same exact set.
I never play the same set twice, ever.
Now, you recently created quite a stir on the internet with some comments about
me?
About a DJ.
little me? Would I do that? About a DJ?
Oh, yes. Somebody that I think...
Oh, you're not talking about Dead Rat. He's
indeed.
Not a DJ. He's a pop performer.
He is.
He's not a DJ.
He's a pop performer, hands yeah. down. You'll get no argument with me on
I
that
I mean, if
one.
He was a DJ, he wouldn't say that all DJs are shit. For a start. And like my rant at Deadmau5 isn't because I've got a problem with him or because I'm jealous that he's a big star
right.
earning millions and I'm still an underground DJ after all these years. It's about defending my culture. And this guy
Agreed.
For years and years and years has been slagging off DJs. You know, what right does this guy have to slag me off?
Right.
He doesn't have no right to slag me off. I'm a DJ. And he's saying that all DJs are this and all DJs are that. And that's very loose. He's not being specific. And I take issue with that. And I'm not afraid to stand up for this culture that I love, that I'm immersed in and that I believe in and hit back. You know, and like, you know, I had people saying, oh, it's not very Buddhist of you. Yeah. And I said, well,
well
you know
I almost
what?
Peed myself laughing.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, well, like, my retort to that would be, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, the warrior Prince Arjuna had to go to war with his brothers and cousins and fathers, and he didn't want to go. And he had a conversation with the Lord Sri Krishna, and Krishna said to him, you're a coward. Go and do what's right for the people. But and he was like, well, I've got to fight against those that I love and my brothers. He said, don't be a coward. Stand up for what is right and stand up for what is true and make the right action because the action needs to be made. So being a spiritual-minded guy and being into Buddhism and, you know, I'm all peace, love and chocolate mousse, right? It doesn't mean that I'm a pussy. It doesn't mean that I can't stand up for what's right. And, you know, if this earth got invaded by angry aliens, I'd be at the front fighting.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the whole thing with, like, Dead Rat, I had to stand up and be counted. And a guy called Gerald also stood up and was counted. And it's good that some DJs will say, well, hold on a minute. I think what you're saying there is wrong and not very nice. And I, for one, will always stand up for what I believe in and will stand up and protect people and things that I love and my culture. And I think that's right.
And on that note, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Zen Trips. This dude with my very special guest, Mr. C, will be back with you in just a few minutes.
Thank you.
We are back. You're listening to Zed Trips live with Mr. C in the house conversing with Dude. And you were talking about these DJs. We had started speaking about how some DJs were, as you put it, slagging off on others.
Yeah.
You know, and then you started talking about Krishna. And I was taught quite a while ago when I was on my path that basically if somebody is doing something to incur karmic debt upon themselves and you just allow it, that you are, it's not so much enabling, but you know, if you don't do the right thing, you're become karmically bound to work that out as well.
Well, inaction is, there's three types of action. There's a good action, bad action, and inaction. And inaction is a very Buddhist route. For many, you know, you get Buddhists and they let go of all of their attachments and they deny themselves of everything. They give up their house, family, all material possessions, dress up in orange and go and sit on a mountain and meditate. And they go for the inaction route. But inaction isn't as strong spiritually, and you'll hear this from all of like the top people in Buddhism, isn't as strong as right action. And I'm a right action kind of guy.
Yeah.
So that's the way I would prefer to go. And, you know, inaction is okay. It's a good thing to be inactive and let people create their own karma and do their own thing. And for the most part, I would do that. But at the same time, when I feel that there is need for action or I just feel riled up enough, I'm getting involved.
Yeah. And you have to.
Yeah.
You have to. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're so proactive.
Yeah, well, someone's got to do it. Well, and a lot of people won't.
You know, the fact that you've stayed true to your form and, you know, you seem to revel in being underground. I can appreciate that because we're underground as
well.
Yeah,
well, it's not even about being underground. Underground is when you dig a hole in the ground. Wow. So I don't even like to call it that. And also a lot of the music that you hear and even music that I play is commercial. Should I say? It's cutting edge, right? But there is a commercial viability to it. You know, I'll play Hyde Park Cafe for Snatch tonight, and it'll be full. Does that, there's a commercial viability to that. The club is making money. I'm making a DJ wage. Everyone's earning something, which in just by the nature of that means it's commercial. So I don't like to use the word underground. I much prefer to use the words cutting edge and innovative.
Like
and innovative. And I've got a very, 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 very low boredom threshold with everything in life. And I demand quality with everything in life. And I want what's new, what's fresh, and what's exciting. And like I say, I go to the record store, and every time I go to the record store, like I bought 55 records, like I mentioned last week, that I brought back from London. I turned down another 55 that I liked, and the reason I turned them down is because they was no different to maybe 55 that I bought the month before, or 30 that I bought, or the month before that. Even though they were great songs, and it's, yeah, I can mix them in and use them, whatever. Are they innovative? Are they turning me on? Am I getting a chubby?
Well, the fact that you're spinning vinyl gives me a chubby.
Yeah. Nice. No, well, like, you know, that, I mean, that's another thing. I believe that all formats are relevant, be it digital, be it vinyl, be it CDs, be it laptops. It's all relevant. I have my own personal preference, and I play vinyl because I like the tactile side of it, and it's sexy. You know, like this, you know, you see a guy doing a laptop set and playing from Serato or Traktor or whatever, and they look like they're doing their emails. They're in their computer.
It's kind of hunched
over.
It's kind of sterile.
They look like they're doing their emails or something, you know, and it's not hot. You know, then there comes like someone like me, and, you know, I'm like looking through my crate, and I whack out a 12 incher and I throw it on the decks and mixing it in, and there's that interaction with the crowd. It's sexy. And I kind of like being sexy.
What was the first record you got, Sexy Man?
The first record that I ever bought was a 7-inch called Instant Replay by Dan Hartman.
Wow. That's amazing. Because I remember getting my first 12-inch single, and I'm like, wow, they used a whole album to put one song on there?
Yeah.
I said to my friend, I go, why are there just vocals on this track and just beats on that? And he goes, let me show you.
Yeah.
And the light went off.
Yeah.
And I was hooked myself.
Yeah, fantastic.
Do you have any, I know you've been involved with so many labels. Do you have anything coming up here in the near future that you're really like really excited about?
Yeah, I've got so much going on. It's ridiculous right now. The last two or three years, I've been a little bit lazy with production and making music. I only had one EP out last year with my production partner from New York, Adult Napper, Francis Harris. We call ourselves the Sycophant Slags.
Great name.
Yeah, it's a social term. You know, like everyone's brown-nosing everyone in the industry, and it's like, you know, there's so much sycophancy.
How do you
on.
Do it? I wish I'd
so
have thought of that.
We called ourselves the Sycophant Slags. It was actually Francis that came up with it. It was hilarious. So that's a project that I've been doing. We put out like maybe just one EP a year for the like last 10 years or so. So I had one EP last year, and the year before I had two EPs. I had a Mr. C EP and a Sycophant Slags EP. And I've done a couple of remixes in that time, but I've decided to step it up. So I started working on an album, which is just about finished, but it's very eclectic, and I might even break the album up and put it out as separate EPs on separate labels. I'm still not sure yet. But
is that diverse?
Well, yeah, it is. It goes from like sort of 116... 112 offbeat funky stuff to 126 techno. It has vocals. The lyrical content on the album is very social, political, and spiritual. So it's got a very sort of shaman-esque kind of vibe to it in some ways. So it is a concept album. It's called Smell the Coffee, and it's about people waking up, like waking up their consciousness and waking up to the crap that's going on in around the world and standing up to it. So there's like, you know, a lot of lyrical content on there, but again, there's no one doing that sort of thing, and I'm wondering whether that's the right route for me to go and whether I should split up the records. I finished this album last year, and I still haven't placed it. I'm still not sure what I want to do with it, and I'm still tinkering on tracks. But also, in the meantime, I've been doing quite a few remixes, and I started a new collaboration with one of my favorite house producers from the West Coast. His name's Kenneth James Gibson. He goes under the name Appendix Shuffle, and we've just done an EP together that was released at the end of March and beginning of April, and the remixes came out on vinyl just last week. I did the remix on the original. I only did the vocals, so I did a remix which is on part two with a couple of other good remixes, Jordan Lieb and Mikhail Stravelstand. I've also started another new project with an old tech house DJ producer called Afi Youssef from London, and over the last 6 months we've made a handful of tunes together, and we've not done anything with them yet. We're calling ourselves the Indigo Kids.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm excited about that project. It's very nice. I'm going to put it on my own label, Super Freak, which I'm relaunching. It's been dormant for the last 4 or 5 years, and I've decided it's time to relaunch. So I'm very excited.
What better
about
title than the Indigo Kids?
Indigo Kids. It's great. So that's another project. So
I'll be sitting next to you here in the studio.
Yeah, great. So I'll be working three projects: Mr. C, Indigo Kids, and Sycophant Slags. I've also just done some fresh remixes. I've got a remix coming out of my partner in LA, who I do the parties with. His name's David Scuba. He's now getting involved with the label with me and my other UK partner, Luke VB. Well, David Scuba and Mikhail Stravestan just done an amazing track called Money Dish. So I did a remix of that, but added a whole new vocal about occupying and like the big families owning the money and keeping it to themselves. So I did this like quite in your face spoken word vocal, like, who's making all the money? I'll tell you who's making all the money. It's the biggest families in the world making all the money. It's the government's making all the money. Well, it's time to take that money back. It's time to occupy.
Agreed.
So I did this track, like the remix, which is dope, and put this vocal on top, and that's coming out next month. I've also done a remix of a guy from Northern Ireland who calls himself Fractious. That's coming out on September on NB Records out of Austria. And I just done a remix of some local guys. They call themselves Joint Custody.
Yeah, we know Maddie and Joe.
Maddie and Joe. Good friends. Yeah, I just done a remix for those guys of a track called Lights and Buttons, and it's off the chain. Appendix Shuffle has also done a remix, and I've just managed to persuade them to let me have it for Super Freak, so I'm signing the guys to my label.
Excellent. I'm so happy for them.
Yes.
You know, Maddie and Joe have been longtime supporters of ours. We've been mutually supporting
good
each
guys.
Other.
Good guys. I mean, the music's good. And, I feel great about bringing them on board.
I think it's an excellent decision. And so, I'm really glad they made the move to Miami so they could get more exposure the way they wanted
sure,
to.
For sure, for sure. And they're hardworking guys. They really mean it. It comes from the heart.
Manic.
So I'm delighted to have them on board.
And Maddie has a beautiful soul.
Yeah.
He does. So, yeah, he actually calls me dad. We started this whole joke thing. It's so funny. Like, someone said, who's this? He's like, it's my dad. Right? And they're like, really? And I said, yeah. So I piped in straight away. Yeah, like when I was touring with a shaman back in the day, I banged his mum. She was a slapper. And here's the wonderful result. It's my boy. And it's continued. And like, he introduces people to me as his dad all the time. And he's always telling people, yeah, Mr. C is my dad. And then I get people call me. I met this guy who says he's your son. I'm like, oh, my son, May. The confusion that we've been causing has been hilarious.
That's excellent. Joe is actually supposed to be spinning a set on the show next week. So
nice.
It'll be very nice to have him out. Take another quick break here. You're listening to Zen Trips. And, of course, I have Mr. C in the house with me tonight. This is Dude. We'll be right back.
He's a good.
All right, we are back. Zen Trips in the studio with Mr. C. This is Dude, and I'm really enjoying what's going on here, and I love your energy.
Thank you, sir.
Most of the people that I've had to interview, I've met a lot of really good people, a lot of really cool people. But we were talking about earlier, some people are more in it for the self-aggrandizement. Mm-hmm. And you obviously love what you're doing. It's you're living it. It's not even like, okay, I'm going to do this because or this or that. It's just like you're this endless expression of creation.
I'm an artist. And the whole point of art is human evolution. We get inspired by art, and through the inspiration of art, we create new art, and it's about moving forward. And that art is the instrument of human evolution. And I'm privileged to be able to be a conduit for that.
And I'm right there with you on that. Absolutely. And we were talking on the way to the studio. You know, we seem to have a similar bent as far as the spiritual journey goes.
Yeah.
And listening to what you're talking about, I've applied a lot of that stuff myself. And in 87, I had my true awakening with that. I had been, you know, researching a bit on the path for a while. And then listening to the things that you're talking about and seeing how this stimulates people. I really think what you're getting ready to do with this new release, this album you've put together, I think is really going to strike a chord with a lot of people.
Oh, well, I hope so. Well, like I say, I still don't know what I'm going to do with it. I sent it to a handful of labels, friends, and they're like, oh, I like this track, that track, and that track, but I'm not sure about that and that. So they're obviously not getting it. It's an album. It's a concept. And right. It's like, well, you know what? So that's what's made me think, well, maybe I should place those tracks with those guys and those tracks with those guys. And then I think, well, you know what? No. I might split up the tracks as three EPs and like have it Smell the Coffee Part 1, Smell the Coffee Part 2, Smell the Coffee Part 3, and put them on Super Freak and do it myself.
I think that would be awesome.
That's the option that's like ringing bells at the moment.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you in the past couple of years have moved to the States.
Yes. It'll be 3 years at the end of October that I moved to Los Angeles.
I'm sure that's quite a departure from London.
Oh, wow. London's very much like New York. It's a big city. It's very fast. It's a money-hungry city. It's crazy. It's very easy to get lost. And then LA is like, it's a huge city as well, a big metropolis. But it's way more laid back, I think, because of the weather. People are a lot more chilled out. And it's still got that Californian hippie vibe in there, which, deep down, I'm a bit of a hippie. And, I really like that. I like the friendliness of people and the openness. You know, I can go into a bar and talk to anyone. If I did that in London, people would be like a little bit defense. Wall goes up. Like, why is this guy talking to me? Is he a cop? Is he, whereas in LA, you just go, say, hey, how you doing? Sit down and say, yeah, I'm good. How you doing? Straight away, you're having a conversation.
And you can crash any party out there.
Yeah, you can.
It's not like the East Coast.
Yeah, no, you can crash any part. It's great. No, I just like it. One of the main reasons for me moving, obviously, it's about a lifestyle change and looking for that certain quality of life. I'm not getting any younger, and I do demand now a bit more quality in my life. So that was one reason for moving out there, but also for acting purposes. Before I left London, I studied weekly, this very serious form of method acting, hardcore method. It's based on the teachings of Konstantin Stanislavski and Michael Chekhov.
Wow.
And it's method, but the style that I've learned is called the spiritual psychology of acting. So it's basically Stanislavski meets Buddhism. And it's pretty amazing. Like the whole psychology, like I've really since then gone head over heels with psychology. I'm really into psychology now, and I just want to help everyone out with their problems. Psychoanalysis. And that's being an actor. You know, as an actor, you observe life, what's going on around you, and you break it down, and you work out why certain people are doing certain things. So now I've got this new string to my bow, and it's like I never thought I'd find something that I enjoyed as much as DJing, and I have. Like acting, wow. It's like there's so many similarities with acting and DJing in that if you do the preparation, you work hard, you get everything right, and you prepare so hard that you can't get it wrong, then you can let go and not think about it and let the universe take over.
So you lose yourself in the character.
Well, the best DJ sets, it's not when you're thinking, am I playing hard enough? Am I playing too hard? Should it be deeper? Should it be a bit more uplifting? You're going to play a rubbish set. Whereas if you're heard, you're not thinking about it. Something's just saying, yeah, play that. You put it on. You're not even thinking. And it just gels and you're in the zone. And it's the same with acting. It's exactly the same. And on top of that, it's like being a kid. You get to pretend to be someone else.
And how awesome is that to be able to bring yourself back to that childlike state?
It's amazing.
Because that keeps you in that state of mind of because if you can see things through a child's eyes, everything is new and fresh.
Exactly, exactly right. And, you know, there's a lot of new young DJs coming through that I love. It's amazing. I don't feel like I'm needed anymore. There is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel for me now. It's not attractive to be an aging DJ. I'm 46 now, and I look great for my age. I'm still into fashion, and, you know, like some people might say lamb dressed as mutton, but, you know, like, I love it. I'm still into fashion. I've still got this young energy. I've still got this vibrancy. I've still got the hunger and the passion for the music and for the spinning, but I can't do it forever, and I don't want to be this old guy behind the wheels of steel. But I'm an artist, and I'm a performer, and I'm an entertainer. So acting was a logical progression for me, and it's something that I can grow old disgracefully doing.
Well, having met you and had conversations with you, as well as the interview tonight, I can honestly say that I think you will excel at it.
I know I will. It's again that going back to that thing about positive thinking and the law of attraction and creating your own destiny and your own future. Like I did when I said to, you know, my friends, oh yeah, I'm gonna be a DJ. When I said I'm gonna be a famous rapper, they laughed. When I said, oh right, I'm gonna be an international DJ, they laughed. When I said I'm gonna own the best nightclub in the world, they sort of believed me. and so it goes. And it's the same with acting. I'm a great actor. I've really got it down. I can play any character whatsoever. And because I'm a great actor, there's no way I can fail. I'm going to put in the work in the right place at the right time. I landed a major role in a $6 million independent British flick that shoots next year. I get to play the devil.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
That's really apt. So that's nice. And
so your big main debut is going to be as the villain.
Yeah, as the and not just any villain, the devil himself.
The devil.
It's in the form of a gangster, but it is Lucifer. And it's my job to stop a boy finding his spirituality, which is what Lucifer's job is to stop God's creation finding their true way.
That's true.
And that's what I get to play. I did a small flick in March, just a short cameo role, a fun film that's called Luck. That should be out at the end of this year. And basically it's about a guy, he's a bum, but he's got luck with numbers. And he's got to persuade 20 people to give him £20. No, he's got to ask 20 people, I beg your pardon, to give him £20, and 10 of those have to give it. And I'm one of those 20 people that he asked. So that was a nice little piece. And the director, it was an improv piece. And I was going to do something completely different, but some other actors messed up on a part where they have to give the guy £5. I wasn't going to give him anything. I was just going to abuse the guy. But the director said, no, you actually have to give him £5. Well, that makes me a nice guy if I've got to give him £5, not someone who's going to, a nasty, horrible, abusive guy. So I had to completely change it. And at the end of the day, the director was delighted, and that's an actor's job. It's an actor's job to serve the vision and the wishes of the director. It's not about the actor, it's about the story, about the script, and about the vision that the director has. So the fact that the director was over the moon and delighted with me made me feel really good that I was able to get the job right and be part of that artistic creation.
Well, it's good to see you're getting to take that step in the direction that you want to.
Yeah, and I'm lucky as well, because you get lots of actors, you know, I'm seeing it in LA, and they're desperate, and it's not a good look.
You know, if you focus on that desperation, and that's the creative part of your mind, just keeps seeing you with the empty pockets and not having what you want, it just keeps creating more of it.
Well, I'm one of the lucky ones, because I already have an amazing career in music, and it doesn't seem to be letting up. So I can continue along the path that I'm going, and as the right things come along, and they will, I will be in the right place at the right time. It's called synchronicity, and that's what comes of the law of attraction. So it will come, and I'm in no hurry.
I'm a big proponent of the law of attraction.
Absolutely.
Right there with you.
Word.
You know, and this energy that we're getting ready to experience over the next couple of weeks is going to be transformational for a lot of people. And I try to explain to people, I said, you know, you've got these major bodies of energy that are pushing and pulling on each other, and it creates discord. But this time they're in a specific alignment that's going to intensify it. And the only way that you can really deal with it is to harmonize with it.
Well, the change, the shift in human consciousness has begun.
It has.
Like the Mayan calendar that ends on December 21st, 2012, is wrong.
Yeah.
They didn't take leap years into account.
Yep.
Yeah. So actually, the shift started in August last year.
Yes.
And I mean, you just have to look on Twitter and Facebook. Since that time, the amount of people putting things about being the change that you seek, being positive, meditation, psychedelics, altered states of consciousness, it's rampant. It's like things are really kicking in. The change has started. We are in the next phase now.
Oh, yeah. That old order is just falling away.
It's falling to bits.
And they're going kicking and screaming.
Yeah, and we're so lucky to be here to witness this. As Terence McKenna put it in Re-Evolution, the fastest release of compressed change since the purpose of the beginning of the cosmos.
It's called shooting the loop, man.
Yeah.
Actually, we'll talk about that off there. I want to share an experience with you. Terence McKenna, you just quoted him. I'm trying to think of how to ask this. You're familiar with the chart that he and his brother put together.
Yeah, time-space zero concept.
Exactly. Yes. I've had so many people ask me personally what I thought about the Mayan calendar and the end of the world. It's actually the end of time or the end of a cycle.
It's the end of a cycle. There is another Mayan calendar that starts when this one leaves off that lasts for another 5,100 years. You'll be pleased to know.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's just, the fear mongers are doing that because, people can't really evolve if they're focused on fear, you know.
Yeah.
And it definitely slows the vibration down.
Yeah. There must be no fear. The only thing that people are scared of are things that they don't know. And the more information we put out there and the more information that we share, the less fear there will be.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to keep doing.
Giving
information. As we get it, share it. And that's what I love about the internet revolution. It's fantastic. You know, like I am a proper Facebook addict.
Yeah, me too.
I absolutely love it. And it's, you know, you can just share information the whole time. And, you know, there's so much information out there. The old world order cannot possibly keep up.
I think it parallels the collective unconsciousness, the way that it is coming together in certain channels and like energies coming together, that this is a physical expression of that.
It is.
Facebook, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
And on that note, we're going to take our final break. We'll be right back to say goodbye to Mr. C because he has a big gig tonight. So stay tuned. You're listening to Zen Trips. This is Dude with Mr. C.
survival. Natural, magical patterns of percussion is the discussion. So listen up close, let it connect you to the powers that be with the healing rhythmic synergy. Techno tribal, a positively primal, shamanic, anarchistic, archaic revival.
Right back. Mr. C, I want to thank you so much for stopping out and taking the time and being such an open, accommodating, and kind soul.
Dude, it's been my pleasure. It's been one of this interview has been one of the best interviews I've done.
Well,
very
thank
intelligent
you.
Questions about subjects and that I really want to talk about. And I've had a blast. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I look forward to coming out to workshops out on the West Coast.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. Keep on listening to Zen Trips. You can get us at ZenTripRadio.com or find us on MySpace, Zen Trip Independent Radio. Until next time, peace out, y'all.
wanna be. Let your soul and your body and your mind be free. One of a kind. We all are that. We're going all the way is where I'm at. With delivery smooth like water from a fountain. That's why I can move any mountain.
I can move any mountain. Move any mountain. I can move any mountain. I can move any mountain. I can move any mountain. One tribe, one day will come the might to move any mountain. Like sunlight inside my mind.
Best in underground electronica.